You think about the B2B side of things, it's actually not about fame and huge followings. It's more about this kind of credible expertise that is gained from proven experience. So they don't have to have the biggest following, it's just the right following.
This is Revenue Makers, the podcast by Sixth Sense, investigating successful revenue strategies that pushed companies ahead. Hey, Adam.
What's going on?
When's the last time you were influenced by something online and actually bought it?
Well, I've always taken that if it's on the internet, it must be true. So I buy a lot of things that people on the internet tell me to do. So
no, but seriously, in the B2B side of the things, I mean, influencer marketing has been around forever and is a huge booming business.
It is. And this is another area where B2B is catching up to B2C. And we've seen the birth and now explosion of B2B influencers, kind of along with thought leadership, which we can sort of put together and sort of separate. But today's guest really just hit at both of these things in a really, really strong data-backed manner, because again, they're coming from LinkedIn. And we have Fredrik Borgström, who he's got a dual role, actually. He runs all of agency development in EMEA and LATAM for LinkedIn, agency partners across, it's a pretty large swath. He's also the chair of the UK chapter of the International Advertising Association. So he's got really interesting perspective on both of these topics.
I agree. And I think he really gave a nuanced view of the influencer explosion in B2B, because there's influencers, but does it always have to be, right? There's an employee advocacy component here. There's rich thought leadership content. There is niche influencing that's happening within industries and within, you know, even certain verticals. So it was a great POV. And of course, he's got a research report that LinkedIn worked on with Edelman around the impact of influencers in B2B and what's really working well and what maybe isn't.
Yeah, a lot of great insights, a lot of actionable tips as well. So let's do it.
Let's do it.
Fredrik, thanks so much for joining us, or should I say influencing us, because that's where we're going to go today. So just let's dive right in. So LinkedIn and you, and you're the author on this, or at least big part of it, is published this report on the business of influence, right? So we're always talking about influencers. And obviously, I think we all agree that the last year has been just the explosion of B2B influencers everywhere. From your perspective, right? What do you think the role is of the B2B influencer? Like, I mean, it's easy to look at what goes on and can like B2C, right? Like the influencers are everywhere. Someone posts about shoes on TikTok and they sell, you know, millions and millions of dollars.
But Adam, like, are you really looking at shoe ads on TikTok?
Maybe. No.
Well, I have, unfortunately, bought even Instagram. I do feel like I'm a sucker for good ads.
Yeah. So like the role there is clear. Maybe the role isn't as clear in B2B. So what do you think about from that perspective?
No, thank you, Adam. Thank you so much. Delighted to be here. And yeah, it's this concept of B2B influencer thought leadership is definitely something that we as LinkedIn have been looking a lot into. And just for clarity, I was definitely not the co-author of the research that is done by people much smarter than me, you know, customer science organization led by Mel First. But I have read it from cover to cover, and it's definitely a really interesting piece of work. And first of all, like the kind of role of B2B influencers and content creators, I can only see them becoming more and more important as we kind of go through this year and years to come. It almost feels like this is finally the year of the mobile, which was kind of, you know, something we talked about years ago. And now I think that this probably is the year of the kind of B2B influencers. First of all, like, the creator economy is estimated to be $500 billion by 2027. Given that B2B is basically 50% of all business, this is an incredible opportunity for us as a sector. And, you know, we as kind of B2B marketers, so the thing that we need to do is to get a group of people in a buying group to reach consensus and make a decision, which is incredibly hard, right? It's kind of one of the most difficult things any marketer can do. Selling shoes on TikTok is relatively easy, but getting 23 people to kind of agree on a new CRM tool or something is incredibly difficult. So when we know that content and thought leadership from experts that resonate incredibly well with the entire buying group is already today really important, and it will become more and more important as we can move forward. And as you mentioned, we've seen it had to have a massive impact in B2C. And, you know, B2B buyers are humans at the end of the day. Like, we don't just, you know, take off our hoodie and shorts when we cannot go into work. We put on our suits, right? Like, the way that we consume media, the habits we have when we decide on what consumer goods to buy will transmit and transfer over to how we make business decisions. So definitely feel like it's another really important tool in kind of our customers and our partners' toolbox to kind of make sure that we do what's right with.
Absolutely. And, you know, Sixth Sense Research shows, we released a B2B buyer's experience report earlier this year, and it showed that 81% of the time, B2B buyers have already picked out their preferred vendor before they reach out to somebody, which, again, just goes back to what you're seeing in this Edelman LinkedIn report around trust-based engagement. One really interesting stat in there was that 73% of decision makers trust thought leadership more than traditional marketing materials. I mean, are we doing it all wrong at this point? Why do you think decision makers are putting so much weight on this type of content?
Yes, I don't think we've done it all wrong, to be honest. But I guess we can also kind of tweak what we do, right? It's all about marginal gains. How can we just become 1% better every single day when we kind of go to work, right? And, you know, as I said, time and time again, we've seen the research. People trust people rather than companies, right? They trust experts and their peers more than what, you know, a faceless organization is sharing. So definitely, it's where we can have the most influence. They also want to feel safe with the decision they're making, right? And if you see experts in your field, peers that you have, that you now have worked with, or general kind of thought leaders in your field, like, you feel more reassured that kind of the decision you're making is right. And, you know, for years we've used the quote, like, no one ever got fired from buying IBM. And it's kind of influencers and thought leadership content is kind of like almost that way to reassure your buying audience that, like, you can be confident and be safe and trusted with this product or service. Then, you know, that helps them reach that consensus and that decision. So I definitely feel that's the case. And we often talk about this, it's kind of 95-5 rule, where, you know, at any given point in time, only 5% of the audience is in a buying process, 95% is outside of it. So how do you, you know, build, you know, connection with that audience when they're not in the buying mindset? So when you get to the buying mindset, you are one of the two on the day one list, right? So you do that with great thought leadership and kind of influencing people through creators rather than bombarding them with white papers or product sheets and these things, I think.
And then there's a delicate balance, right, too, because you could also go and over index and just be like, you know, influencers all day, all the time, and it's all over the place. And or you go heavy into thought leadership. I think there's some B2B brands that have probably are over-indexing a little bit too, right? Maybe to the point of like, you again, get to see your face all over. Maybe people say that about us, Simon.
Maybe.
Never mind. No, bad example. Anyway, what do you think the balance is and how do you figure that out?
I did see you put on an episode on Christmas Day, which I thought was very impressive. I listened to this morning on my walk, actually back from school, having dropped off my son. I was like, that's good, actually. But then again, like, maybe when you're sitting down having a family Christmas, you might need a break and kind of listen to something interesting. It could be quite a good thing to do.
Also, that was a repeat. So we took a page out of Law and Order and we just started showing repeats during off season. But actually, interestingly enough, those episodes, we could talk about those episodes got a ton of listens and downloads and engagement, which I wasn't sure what to expect, but
it was Frederick.
Yeah, it was me. I listened to it this morning, to be honest.
Reload. No.
First and foremost, I think that the really important thing that you need to think about is, like, think about your message. Think about what is the solution or what support are you bringing to your consumers and customers to help solve them his problems and challenges. Right? So I think that's the most important thing to do that, like, initially in the process, right? And once you're clear on that, like, what is the kind of the real kind of support you bring to your customers, then you can start to think about, how do I kind of balance the mix of everything, right? How I balance my kind of corporate thought leadership, how do I leverage my executives, how do I leverage the employee base that we have, and then sprinkle on some kind of creators on top of it. So I don't think there's like sort of one silver bullet for any of these things, right? It's almost using it in combination. It's organic, it's paid, it's thought leadership, it's leveraging employee base, as well as kind of your creators. And we normally see that the following of your employees within your company is 12 times bigger than the company's followership. So that's an incredibly important channel to be leveraged. And I think a lot of companies aren't doing that right or well enough. And I think it's like, if the people that kind of manage to like crack that really well, I think is super important. And I also thought we had an event in London last year called B2 Believe, and we had John Evans of the Uncensored CMO podcast fame on stage talking about kind of thought leadership and creators. And it's really interesting that he has a day job, and his day job is the chief client officer of System One. And he launched his podcast as a bit of a side hustle, and it has taken on almost a life of its own. And you know, he's probably as famous for that, or even more famous for that, as an influencer and a content creator than his day job. And I believe that at the moment, almost half of the incoming leads to System One comes from the podcast. So it's, again, like a perfect example of like, actually, you don't have to think about it as like, the executive does this, the employees does this, the creators does this. Actually, you can actually kind of play multiple roles, where you kind of have to make sure you kind of do it as everything, right? Everything is in balance. Like, you can't focus everything on events or have this or this. Actually, it's just kind of how do you, the entire mix, help to drive both short-term and long-term revenue, pipeline, awareness, consideration.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's probably the most important point, right? It's not one versus the other, or even just one form of thought leadership and influencing on the marketing side. It really is that combination. I joked earlier, right? Are we doing it all wrong? Truly, I think at Sixth Sense, we do put a lot of focus on thought leadership type content, research content that will resonate with our target personas and ourselves as well, right? Like, we want to really understand the B2B buying behavior. But why do you feel that so many companies are under resourcing and underutilizing that channel, right? Thought leadership efforts. Some of it might go back to the fact that it is tougher to attribute back to what everyone is being measured on, right? Pipeline and leads and things like that. But we've known the impact of a brand to demand strategy. We spoke about it on stage at Cannes last summer together, right? Why isn't this being done more?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the things you touched on there, right? I think it's kind of like, how do you measure the impact of it, right? It's probably not the easiest thing to kind of put into an attribution model and you get like the right thing out. But then maybe using an attribution model full stop might not be the right thing to do either, because you probably don't get the thing in there, which is something I learned from that episode on Christmas Day. You know, one of the biggest mistakes I see is kind of like, again, kind of going back to think about the audience that you're trying to convert and work with. Right, and how, what is the thing that really matters to them? One of the things that we talk a lot about at LinkedIn is this notion of buyer groups. We published a piece of research earlier last year together with Bain and our B2B Institute, where we looked at kind of the concept of buyer group marketing, where there's basically two different types of buying groups within the entire buyer group. One is the target buyers, that kind of is the traditional titles that you would go to target, like, you know, it could be a CIO, CTO, and then you have the hidden buyers, which is kind of the more of the operational team. So it could be procurement, finance, HR, operations. And these two groups have equal amounts of say in the buying decision. But what's relevant to them are two completely different things, where the target buying group are more about, you know, they want to see the data, they want to see the specs, they want to make sure that the technology they buy is, you know, innovative and cutting edge and all these things, where the hidden buyers are all about trust, safety, brand. Like, again, like, I don't want to kind of lose my job because we made this decision. So if it's like something that my peers are happy with, things I'm reassured that it's actually a trusted product, that like if I pick it, no one can point a finger at me and say like, you picked the wrong solution, then they're convinced. So they're happy to pay a higher price for a product with less features if the brand is something that they know and the whole buying group knows from day one. So when you think about it, actually, that's kind of how you can then have different content, different messages appealing to these two buying groups. So maybe in a way, like the kind of the corporate thought leadership and the white papers and the data heavy side is brilliant for the target buyer when they're in that kind of mindset, where like maybe like the kind of the more brand focused, trust and safety focused content that you can maybe do through other executives or through creators speaks at hidden buying groups. So then all of a sudden you hit that full spectrum. I think so that is really interesting, kind of how you also can think about like where you do what and where in the funnel do you kind of apply some of these strategies, and within the audience, where do you want to kind of resonate? So I think that's kind of where you can always think about having different pieces of content play different roles.
One thing I think, we don't usually get into like products and features here, but I think LinkedIn is in a unique space. I mean, probably most of our listeners are, or we're working with folks that are using LinkedIn from a paid advertising perspective as well. And like, we're talking about thought leadership, we're talking about content, and you've literally developed over the last, I guess it's probably been a year and a half now, a specific advertising product designed thought leadership ads, which from my perspective, I still think it's in its early, early days. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think if you look across like advertisers not being used, it probably aligns with people not doing thought leadership either.
No, for sure. Like, it's definitely like in its early days now. Like in, you know, for a long time when you launched ads on LinkedIn, it was launched from a company page and it was for a company. So you saw like a Sixth Sense ad from Sixth Sense. That was brilliant in a lot of ways, right? But then if you kind of would see, if I'm a CMO in a role and I'm looking at kind of deploy services and I've seen an ad from you side but coming into my feed, that obviously resonates with me a lot more because I see someone in my field that has a similar role to me, speaking my language, being able to help and solve my issues. Like, just kind of makes a lot of sense, right? So I think it's definitely an area that we are kind of leaning into now. And speaking to some of our agency partners that I work closely with and some of our brands as well, they're seeing great results using these ad formats. Because again, it's like people buy from people. So like if an ad is coming from someone, either from the company or someone that you partner with or your customers, then you know, that kind of will definitely resonate really well.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that's really interesting about that, I mean, again, if anyone listening is not familiar, basically the ability to take a post from an individual. Well, it started as taking as a post from an individual working in your organization and sponsoring it out using all of the same targeting as a regular LinkedIn ad, which that in of itself was huge. But what happened not long after, which I think is sort of the entree into influencer, is now being able to do it with someone who doesn't work for your company. They can allow you. So if, you know, I'm working for the shoe company that I have my side hustle
on
with,
TikTok.
It's on TikTok. Yeah. I could give them permission to post my fashion show video of my feet. Okay, never mind. And then it goes out. And the thing that's really interesting to me is that you've built it in such a way that it's subtle, where it's like you see it, not so huge letters like, you know, sponsored by or brought to you, I forget the exact term, Sixth Sense, you know, whoever the company is. But like that's got so many really interesting use cases, obviously just pure like somebody with a lot of followers, you're bringing them in, but also credibility for like testimonials and all that. So like that feature to me is so well in line with this conversation, the idea of influencers. I mean, I'm curious what you're going to do next with, I'm sure there's all sorts of fun things on the roadmap for that, but that also just seems untapped. So I think it's to anyone out there, like really look into this stuff because it's really powerful. And I know I can speak from our own results in Sixth Sense, like the numbers speak for themselves in terms of the ability to get to drive engagement.
You can have someone else who actually uses it rather than myself. And it kind of goes back to what we talk about, right? Like an influencer in its own right, you know, being able to talk or praise your product, which is perfect. And I think it's a super exciting area for us. And I can only see that growing and growing. And I'm sure when we get to Cannes again this year, there'll be more things that we can talk about in terms of enhancements of it. Like video is a massive play for us at the moment. And I'm sure there'll be more things coming in the kind of create and thought leadership area. And I think, as you said, like the biggest difference, if you think about B2C and B2B, is that in B2C, it's all about fame, right? So you want to get like the big celebrities to kind of endorse your product. And that is often painfully expensive. And maybe like you also have to think about, like, you're hitching your brand to that person's wagon. And like, have you done all the diligence with this person? Like, do you know kind of if they're going to send another kind of tweet out, which is, you know, not aligned with your brand values? And then you think about the B2B side of things. It's actually not about kind of fame and huge followings. It's more about kind of this kind of credible expertise that is kind of gained from proven experience. So they don't have to have the biggest following. It's just the right following. So I remember working with one of Aiden's partners in Israel, and they kind of built an influencer network in cybersecurity. It's a massive industry, but quite a niche following, right? So you don't have to have millions of followers that are, but if you have the right people that are in this space, they're all seen as thought leaders, then like, you're in the right way. So finding those kind of thought leaders that are kind of in the sector, in the sectors that you want to reach, I think is going to be really important.
I completely agree. And at the end of the day, it all really comes back, no matter who is doing it, who is promoting it, who is sharing it, if it's an influencer, if it's an employee, comes back to just great content, really high quality content that can drive engagement, drive sales, and even really command premium pricing for you as a company. Frederick, do you have examples or, you know, some key characteristics of thought leadership or influencer content that really stood out as great?
Yes, I think one thing that still that resonates with me that I heard about was, I think you were there, Simon, as well, right? At a B2B brand summit in London with the International Advertising Association. And Anna Bosalopo from Kindrill talked about this campaign that they ran, a kind of an amazing case study of an organic campaign they ran, which was called Kid to Kindrill, where they basically asked their employees to share stories about them as kids and how their journey and their interests and experiences have brought them to Kindrill, how they are kind of merging their passions with kind of what they're doing.
It was a great campaign.
It is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And actually, like, I did a bit of research for today, and I just kind of looked at they won an award. So I kind of saw the agency that won it for them. And they had about 400 posts in the first 10 days of the campaign, like 600,000 impressions, 71,000 engagements, and it was like a 500% increase in what they normally get. And I think Anne mentioned that someone from LinkedIn got in touch with them saying, like, there's something wrong. Something is happening. It's too much engagement. They're like, no, it's our employees. That's, for me, it's a purely organic campaign that just took off and just had a huge impact. That's the kind of, and it used to, again, like, your employee base, good content when it comes to, like, folks or kids, is always a good thing, right? That for me was a really, really good example of someone who's been utilizing this in a really good way.
So one should set a goal to get LinkedIn engineering to reach out and be like, whoa, you broke your page. What's going on?
Yeah, I think that's always a career goal to have, right? In a way.
Like, yeah.
You get someone from product or engineering calling you saying you've not hacked the system once you can have your page is on fire, then I think you've done something right at least.
Yeah, no, absolutely. For brands out there that are like, okay, this is great, where do I start? I think that cybersecurity is a really good example too, right? Because it's niche, but how do you identify or figure out, I guess, does it make sense for your brand? I guess there's certainly going to be brands where influencers probably don't make sense, or at least there's not a very clear path to it. But what's a really good way to get started, to think about it, to dip the toes, so to speak, in the water for a brand that's thinking about this?
I think it kind of goes back to kind of what we talked about before. I think that first and foremost, like, go back to like the basic thing. Okay, what is the business problems, the challenges or pressures that you are best placed to solve for your customers, either if it's existing customers to protect what you already have or appeal to new ones? And that's the kind of the insight that you should base your content strategy on. And then how do you then kind of start to leverage your executives, your employee base to amplify that message, both kind of driving organic and then kind of putting paid activities behind it. So you kind of think about what do we see resonating? How can we then kind of boost that and then kind of drive it? And then when you think about kind of the creator's strategy, like, again, focusing on working with creators that align well with your brand, with the audience that you want to reach in kind of a trusted, authentic, and credible way. So I think that's also the thing that's really important for us, right? It's kind of that kind of air of expertise, authenticity, and being well trusted, just kind of will kind of have a big impact for what you do. And then going back to kind of what we talked about as well, it's like, this is a long-term play, right? It's like, it's not something like, oh, you turn around and create a story and tons of inbound things immediately, right? It's sadly not the same as if you do it on Instagram or TikTok, other kind of B2C social channel. But this should be part of kind of your long-term strategy. Like, you want to build, you know, future pipeline, you want to bring future cash flow. And if you have that kind of 95-5 rule kind of in the back of your mind, like, how can you start to utilize all of these things in your toolbox when it comes to influence and thought leadership to kind of to drive and have long-term impact and consideration? That's kind of where we can start. And then there are tons of places where you can be inspired, right, as well. Not everyone has to do what the team at Kindrel did, but, you know, kind of seeing kind of sense of your podcast and kind of what John Evans is doing for System One, I think is a great thing. So I'm sure there's plenty to see and learn from as well out there. But I'm sure we see more and more of that as well as we kind of think about the kind of entrance into kind of the B2B Cannes Lions this summer and other large kind of B2B area or B2B events as we kind of go forward.
Listen, this was a great conversation, Frederick. Yeah. So many tangible takeaways and just great ideas. We have a question that we ask every guest at the end of the episode. What is the most ridiculous thing that you've been asked to do in your career?
So my first job I had out of uni was in Stockholm in Sweden. And I was kind of a management trainee for kind of three founders of this company. And our kind of chief creative officer was... he loved giving away very good Christmas presents that was kind of quite impactful. So one year he asked me to source an eighth of a Parmesan cheese to our kind of 200 biggest customers in the Nordic region. Quite difficult to get, but we managed to do it. But I think the most ridiculous was when we then the next year was going to give away a magnum bottle of very nice red wine that we'd sourced from a vineyard in France. So we got it delivered from in France to Copenhagen, where we had an office, and then we distributed it to Denmark, Sweden, and Finland from there, which was very easy because we were all in the EU, so we could distribute wine easily, readily across those markets. But Norway is not part of the EU, and we had 80 customers in Norway, or 100 customers in Norway that we're going to give wine to, and we could basically legally bring in one bottle because it's 1.5 liters. So I had to convince the MD of our company to drive at 3 a.m. from Gothenburg with 100 bottles of magnum bottles of red wine covered by blankets. Luckily, there's no kind of border control between Sweden and Norway, and the statute of limitations have hopefully now passed. So
nobody's going to get in trouble.
Yeah, so I remember waking up in the morning and texting him. I'm like, have you arrived in the office? He's like, yes. I'm like, oh, thank God.
That might be the first one where statute of limitations came up. That was good.
Something else I was thinking about, I'm like, I'm sure that's been the case. And that's definitely the one.
Amazing. Well, this was great. Really appreciate you joining. And hopefully the authorities don't catch up with anybody.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Revenue Makers.
Do you have a revenue project you were asked to execute that had wild success? Share your story with us at sixthsense.com/revenue. We might just ask you to come on the show. And if you don't want to miss the next episode, be sure to follow along on your favorite podcast app.